Hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we're in conversation with Karan Talwar, also known as Bollywood Gandu, a comedian based out of Mumbai.
In this episode, he shares the story of how he left a boring job in the US and returned to India at the age of 28 to start his career in stand-up comedy. This led to the founding of SNG Comedy and later Bollywood Gandu. Over the years, Karan has garnered close to 2.5 million followers on Twitter alone, and he's even been blocked by many Bollywood celebrities on the very same social media channel. So let's find out how and why it all started.
Welcome to the show, Karan. It really is a pleasure to have you with us this week, and I'm a huge fan of your prank calls. And to some extent, I was a bit nervous when you agreed to join us today because I thought it would be part of some elaborate prank.
Maybe it is. It's not. We just started. Maybe it is. Who knows?
So many people know you, Karan, as Bollywood Gandu on social media. And, you know, as always, as interesting as your current life may be, we want to know how it all started and how you got to where you are today. So where were you born and raised? And, you know, what was your childhood like?
Oh, well, first of all, it's Bollywood Gandu. Let me be clear.
Gandu, oh.
That's right. Those are a lot of questions. Let me start with what was the first question that I should start with?
It was, where were you born and raised, and you know, what was your childhood like?
Okay, I was born in Mumbai, where I live. In fact, not too far away from where I am right now. I was born in Bandra, at a maternity ward just right next to Pali Hill. That's where my grandparents lived, and my dad and my mom. My dad was a engineer on ship, so he would sail. And my mom was sailing with him. So that's because, so they didn't really have, like, they didn't have a base as such. So Mumbai became their de facto base because, my nana nani, my grandparents lived here. So that's it. Mm-hmm. I was born here. My parents drove me into a school called Jamnabai in RC, which is a very notorious school for brats and, Gujaratis. And Gujarati brats are a special kind of brat.
why is that?
Man, one of them is our prime minister.
Wow, we're only 4-5 minutes into this and we're already bashing people. That's great, Karan. Keep it up.
I just speak the truth. So Jamnabai Narsi is where I went to school. So it's a very notorious school for brats because it was, back in the day, it was one of the most expensive schools. And now compared to what it is today, it's much cheaper than some of the other schools because right now schools are so expensive. They just add the word international to the name and charge you twice as much. So that's it. I was from kindergarten all the way to 10th grade. I was in the same school, same people. Then as soon as I got my first chance to get out of that circle, I did. And I got admitted to St. Xavier's, in town, in Fort in Mumbai, which is the exact opposite. It's like going from suburbia to the city. So that was great. Also, no uniforms, which is awesome. My school had uniforms, but St. Xavier's, there were no uniforms. So that was amazing, you know, not to, like, having to wear same clothes every day, which is fun for a week, by the way, because after a week, you're like, just take the choice away. I'll just wear whatever. Just give it to me, you know. the choice gets irritating after a while.
And Karan, you know, I probably assume that you were a mischievous boy who'd sit at the back of the class and you'd be drawing funny cartoons of your class teachers. So were you someone who got into trouble quite a lot as a child?
I was exactly that, as you just described. I was the guy sitting in the back and doodling on my notebook and stuff like that. But I definitely wasn't the one who came, like, I wasn't a slacker as far as grades. So I was, like, always in the top 10-20%. It was because school here is very easy. School here is, it's all about crystallized intelligence. You just need to learn whatever the textbook, puke it out for like 3 hours in one morning, and you're done with it. No one's going to ask you about it again. So we learned Shakespeare, something which I feel is very relevant. I mean, we've gone way ahead now. We learned how to use log tables. Why would someone use log tables? Wouldn't it be easier to like find a calculator than a log table book, a log book somewhere? But so a lot of useless information I wish they taught us stuff like actually, you know, like asking a girl out. Like, guys would appreciate that.
You know, it's really funny that Meenal would ask about doodling in class, because Karan, I got a heart attack when she asked that question, because I was someone who did that in fourth grade and I got caught. Mm-hmm. And I was in Delhi at the time, and our teachers used to actually slap us across the face for doing, like, for being mischievous. And I remember that that was the first time I got slapped, I think. And that was for doodling and drawing my teacher and my classmates and everything. So I it was just a flashback when she asked that question.
Wow. So,
PTSD
so,
over here.
Yeah, that's you're having some flashbacks, huh?
Yeah.
See, I always drew stuff. I don't know, what did you draw? Did you draw something that was slap-worthy?
I think I basically drew this teacher or the student or someone like a pig. And I gave them all like animal forms. And it was really mean. It should have just stayed in my head, to be fair. But that's what I do for a living now. Like I in the sense that I don't draw, I write. And my imagination just goes wild, and I have had to really tame it down.
But, you know, Karan, I always say that for someone who's so small as Ankita, she has a lot of evil inside her. Be surprised.
It's what we call the short man syndrome. Have you guys heard of that?
Yeah.
In this case, the short woman syndrome. Yeah.
So, but let's just focus on you for some time now. Enough about me. I want to know what your hobbies at the time were. Were you into writing and comedy back then when you were studying?
See, I always, the comedy genre is what I've always been influenced by. When I was a kid, my parents had, there were three movies in my house, three VHS cassettes back in the 80s.
Right.
And I was this impressionable child, and there were three movies. I remember the first movie was Masoom, which was Nasruddin Shah and Urmila.
Yeah, I love it.
When she was a little baby. Yeah, Lakdi Ki Kaathi. So I remember that.
Yeah.
And then the second movie was Sound of Music. And the third movie was Animal House. All right, so I had quite a diaspora, quite a variety there, right? Like and I gravitated towards Animal House very quickly because that's absurd, stupid, you know, get drunk and have a good time type of. It was such a great film. It was like I don't know if you guys have heard of this movie. It's like the mother or the father of the American Pie movies, you know, the college movies.
Right.
And it had Belushi and a couple other guys that they were just, it was such a great movie and I've seen it so many times and that really influenced what I thought was funny. I thought that was very funny. Like there was a scene in that movie where there's a guy playing guitar, very like schmoozing two girls at a party and Belushi takes the guitar and smashes it to pieces. And I found that really funny and then he hands the guitar back to the guy, the broken guitar. So, all right, go on, play. So I just found that really funny and so, that just started like the comedy seeds in my head that, and I've always been attracted to the genre, as a young boy, I started watching Adam Sandler movies and Chris Farley movies. Mm. And I loved Chris Farley. I thought Chris Farley was the funniest thing I'd seen on screen till Will Ferrell came on SNL and then like, I think kind of almost matched him.
So, Karan, 2 years ago on a Reddit thread, someone asked you this question. Tell me one thing about you or your work that I may start following you. And your response to that question was, and I quote, please don't follow me. Go plant a tree instead. I will be much happier. So at the risk of getting a similar response from you right now, I want to ask you if you could please explain what you do for a living to someone who may not be aware of your work. You know, someone like my mom, for example, who's most definitely tuning in right now. And she's not really aware of a lot of, you know, YouTubers and comedians.
Mm-hmm. So what do I
How
do?
How would you explain what you do?
It's very simple. It's two words. I'm a content creator. I create content on stage. I create content on a screen. And the screen in multiple places. It can be on your television. It can be on your phone. And hopefully in the future, even films. I mean, you aspire for that. That's where you want to go. You want to go to the biggest screen and you want that sort of event, right? That people plan to go and watch something that you've created. That's what it is. It's no different from a painter. It's no different from a sculptor. You want to, at the end of the day, you want people to see the work. I mean, and if an artist says that he doesn't care about the audience, he's a damn liar. Because there's Rembrandt would be Rembrandt if people called him Rembrandt, and, you know, with that awe and all that stuff that surrounds him. There's got to be an audience. Somebody has to appreciate it. Otherwise, it just becomes. I mean, have you guys seen the Louvre? Or not Louvre, the Mona Lisa in real life? Have you guys ever seen that?
I have.
And weren't you like extremely disappointed when you saw it? Like, it's so small.
Yeah, and I was like, well, all this hype for this little square.
Exactly. And that's the key word, hype, you know. So I think hype can work negatively too, but there's got to be hype around whatever you create. But at the end, to answer your question, very simple, I'm a content creator, just like many, many other people, but I have focused on the digital medium, just like you guys. You guys are working on an audio podcast that people consume through their phones. So yeah, that's it.
And Karen, you are a content creator, but your content is quite specific. It is based on comedy most of the time, and even satire. So why do you do what you do?
Why do I do what I do? Well, I mean, actually, it has to do with pants. That's pretty much what it came down to, because I realized that when I was working in corporate America, which was my last real job, I had to wear pants every day, and I wanted to do something where I didn't have to wear pants. So I scanned my brain. Wow. I was like, so what can I do? I was like, what if I went on stage in shorts and like spoke about why it sucks being a bald guy? Or what if I went and just said and like made jokes about like Harsha Bhogle just because I hate the guy? Mm-hmm. I don't hate the guy, but I just make jokes about the guy. But it's funny. So I started doing that, and I started, and it was terrible. People were like, what's wrong with you? Just go find a job. But I refused to do that because it was just like, here's something I can do that not many people are doing, and maybe I can like find something. You know, like it wasn't about money; it was about finding your calling. Like you guys are all, you know, you all have found your calling. You're the artists, you're the medical doctors to be. You're doing a podcast. You guys are trying to find that thing that you can call your own, right? That little piece of something that's like, you know, I did this. So there was a lot of like, I was very naive. I was like, yeah, I just want to make people laugh. And then 3 years down the road, I was like, shit, I'm broke. So then you're like, we need to make some money. So then
is that how you spoke like 6 years ago?
Yeah, I spoke like this. It took me a while. My voice cracked like 3 years ago.
Oh my god.
That's the infomercial guy voice, you know, in Hindi. Yeah. The guy goes, "Pehle main aur chota tha."
But Karan, one of the things about your brand, Bollywood Gandu, is that stood out to us was your tagline, and that's Akshay Kumar's laser hair removal. I mean, I didn't get that. Like, why wasn't it Anil Kapoor? Is there any connection between that tagline and maybe your premature baldness? Or
oh my god,
no, not at all. I mean, wow, that I don't know how you connected those dots, but that's not what it
that
was.
Escalated quickly.
No, it was when I created the account. At that point, Akshay Kumar had a freshly like waxed chest. You know, right. And he was doing this Levi ad where there was a girl like pulling a zipper down, and it was a big controversy, like what's going on. And
wasn't that his wife?
No, that was an event where he put it. But this was the poster. All right, this is the poster. I remember driving down it, and I was like, what's the worst job in Bollywood? That's the worst job. The guy who has to wax that dude's chest and keep it waxed, you know. So at that point, Anil Kapoor had not come out as a closet waxer. He still had hair on his shoulders. So that hadn't happened yet. So I didn't.
Wow, that's quite specific. Yeah. Hair on his shoulders.
Yeah, I've seen. Haven't you seen pictures?
No, I don't. I don't Google hairy men or Bollywood actors on the internet, Karan, in my spare time.
You know, it's a great hobby. I highly recommend it.
You know, Karan, similarly, you know, how we brand ourselves as two girls living in Europe, looking at our Desi culture and society from an outsider's lens, and hence the name Desi Outsiders. And it's not nearly as interesting as your branding initially, but the reason we mentioned this is because you also mentioned that you were a Desi Outsider yourself, and you were working in the US, and then you left your job. I want to ask you, were you a mechanical engineer by any chance? Because there are so many mechanical engineering jokes on your Twitter handle sometimes.
No. Just my social media guy is the guy who does the posting for me. So we jam on jokes and stuff, and he's a young mechanical engineer, and so he has a thing about, you know, he's only 21. So I was like, yeah, okay, fine. But in fact, yesterday we were talking about it. I told him, you know what, let's not do any more. It's a very easy joke. Let's not do mechanical engineering. And just today.
Yeah, the Padmavati poster joke.
Yeah, and then suddenly today people are reposting that on India Times and a couple other websites. And I'm like, oh man, isn't that joke done with? I think engineering students not getting laid is such a lame, old, boring joke that I would never do that on stage. And if someone came on my stage and did that joke, I'd be like, hey, don't come back. get that out.
So what did you do in the US, Karan?
I was working for, I was doing something really boring, in marketing for a company that provided electricity in Texas, which is, it's really complicated. There's no reason for the job to even exist. My job was basically to make more money for the people who I worked for. It was how much money can I get from someone? What's the most they're willing to pay for their electricity? So it was very boring in a sense, I don't know.
And you had to wear pants. I mean, come on. Like, why would you even do that job?
Dude, and you know, this whole idea, this corporate life, you know, I don't know if you guys have this, maybe in your college, in your workplace, y'all do it. People behave differently in a corporate world. You know, everyone acts extra polite, like people hold the door.
Yeah.
And I just feel like this is such a fakeness. Like, it's almost like this forced slavery that's going on. You know, everyone behaves like the slave. You know, you can see the invisible chains around their necks, their legs, and
how old were you when you left everything and came back to India?
28.
Okay. And that's when you were going through puberty, and that's when your voice broke.
Yeah, it was
at 28.
That time. I was so people looked at me weird.
So, Karan, did you even ever watch Bollywood at a young age? Like, have you always been, for lack of a better term, against it?
I wasn't against it because I was too young when I was in my teens to even like know. Also, there was no context, right? You're not seeing the great art that was coming out from like Korea or like sometimes like, you know, the Israeli movies that I've seen and some of the stuff I've seen. You know, even some of the Hong Kong films these days. You know, they're so good. So there was none of that existed. So that's where I was exposed to. And so what happened is, have you guys seen PK?
I saw like half an hour of it and then I fell asleep for obvious reasons.
Okay, so PK is very simple. The idea, there's always an innocent, there's got to be a certain level of innocence when you come into something to truly break it apart. You know, so in other words, that the Aamir Khan's character doesn't understand how people work and how religion works, which is why he's able to see it in such a black and white way, where we will keep making complications. You know, like when my dad got his stents put in his heart and he survived his surgery, everyone was like, whoa, God did it. God's great. But then 2 weeks later, he died. No one blamed God for that. So it's a weird, you know, sort of hypocrisy on humans, how things work. So I was away from Bollywood for 10 years, long story short. And so that 10 years really, when I came back, I was hit in the face by it. I was literally slapped in the face by how outrageous it had become, how shallow it had become, how, you know, nepotistic and, you know, almost like incestual, you know, the same people. And I'll give you guys an example, a very simple example. There's a billboard near my house where I live. And this billboard, the outer part of it, there's a, you know, new one put in, it sort of vanished. The wind was really strong, so it sort of flew up. It just sort of vanished. And so you could see the layer behind it. And that layer was from 10 years, it was from when I had left, like 1997, 98. Okay, and that had it was an award show, so like a Filmfare Stardust Award. And it had, here are the actors. It had Salman Khan on it, it had Shah Rukh Khan on it, it had Ajay Devgan on it. Okay, and here we are 10 years later. It's Ajay Devgan, it's Shah Rukh Khan, it's the same dudes. We haven't progressed, but guess what's been changed? We went from Madhuri to, you know, we went from one woman to Raveena Tandon to Karishma Kapoor to Kareena Kapoor, and now we are at Deepika, which she'll be soon fading away. Priyanka Chopra is already like aging, so now it's time for Alia and Kangana. And yeah, it's Bhoomi, and you know, all these new girls are already coming in, but the dudes, it's the same dudes.
It's quite disturbing to see Govinda at the age of like 40, 50, whatever, like dancing with really young girls. I think that is a very good point that you do make.
Yeah. So, in fact, you know what? Shah Rukh has replied to me on Twitter once when I made fun of him about this. That was the one time he bothered, like, he called me a nincompoop.
Nincompoop?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is so British of him.
Yeah, it is, right? And Shah Rukh's such an anomaly because Shah Rukh's he's an intelligent guy. You know, he's smart. Like, he carries himself. He's got charm. But he picks the shittiest of movies. And, you know, he makes such bad decisions when it comes to his career. And I think he appreciates that he's made a career out of making puppy faces. That's Shah Rukh, you know, puts his hands up and makes that puppy face, and all the aunties are like, okay, I'll take my money.
But Karan, may I ask, what did you actually tweet that he respected by it?
When will Shah Rukh stop dancing around the trees with the girls half his age? And the answer, that was the question, and the answer was, Jab Tak Hai Jaan.
But Karan, you know, like calling out bullshit like this is—it's often the most effective way of bringing out reform. And when it's done with humor, the way you do it, it's really digestible. It's really effective. But sometimes, you know, things can easily get out of hand and mm-hmm. they can get too personal as well. Mm-hmm. So do you ever regret targeting or attacking a celebrity on Twitter or any other social media platform? And then in hindsight, have you felt like they didn't really deserve it because everyone's human after all or whatever reason?
No, I don't feel like I personally, this word troll is a common word. When I started tweeting about Bollywood, the word troll doesn't exist in our vocabulary. And it started coming because what people started doing was they started jumping on my sensibility, especially towards Bollywood, because Bollywood is a soft target. You know, you can make fun of Bollywood and they can't, you know, have political clout. No one's going to come to your door and break it down. But my whole angle was, how can I make a joke out of it? How can I like objectively, of course the victim is the person in question, but how can I make a joke where there was somebody who had no stake in the matter would find it funny? You know, so like, for example, the big thing that happened with Abhishek Bachchan, which is, I think, just ridiculous because it was just, I've had plenty of those sort of talks, but it was covered by every media outlet, even like in Pakistan, you know, like everywhere that Abhishek Bachchan took on this mean Twitter troll and KRK came to his rescue. And I was like, what is going on, man? It was quite ridiculous. The whole thing was very ridiculous. But if you see the tweets that I have made in that conversation, everything was a joke. It all was a joke.
Right.
He took it personally.
But did you intend to get something in response when you asked the question? It was basically, for our listeners who don't have context, it was basically, what am I doing with my life? Am I making enough money? Why am I still following Abhishek Bachchan? And he responded with, oh, you're not doing anything with your life. You're probably making enough money based on your talent. And I don't know why you're following me. I stopped following you some time ago or something like that.
Exactly.
And then it was a little bit of a back and forth. And what did you intend to get in response to the first tweet you put out there?
No, are you kidding? You think I thought he didn't respond to that? I think, Abhishek Bachchan has better things to do than...
But you tagged him in it.
I tagged it. That's the one rule of Bollywood Gandu. Bollywood Gandu doesn't slide tweets. Bollywood Gandu says it to your face. He tags you. You want to take it, take it. You want to take it, block it. It's simple.
Mm.
There's no. It's very simple. And if you look at the conversation, it was a very harmless sort of tweet that I made towards him, right? It wasn't that very aggressive at all. I was just like joking. Why am I still following this guy? And
But it did end up there, right? Like in the end, it got a bit personal, yeah.
Oh, it did. It did because I think the personal thing started on his end. I'm not trying to point fingers, but so my response to him was very simple. If you read the conversation to what he said to me, I was like, fair enough. The only difference between you and I is that whatever I've done it on my own, not because of my dad.
Mm.
So then he got pissed off saying, oh, but I love my family. I was like, I never said that you don't. And then I apologize. Like, I apologize. It's not your dad that you're famous for. It's your wife.
That was too fast, Bill.
But it's a joke. It's all of it is a joke. That there's a setup and a punchline. In every tweet, there's a setup and a punchline. Now, here's the thing. When a joke takes place... See, here's the thing. I'll give you guys an example. When I make a joke in India today about Rahul Gandhi, and I make a joke about Narendra Modi, okay? And no matter how funny the Narendra Modi joke is, it's a Rahul Gandhi joke that'll get more retweets, more likes, more appreciation. Because today it's not about we can't be objective anymore. Now it's about do we like the victim? Do we care about the victim? So with Abhishek Bachchan, there's a lot of sympathy that are bechara. You know, he's tried so hard. He's done 25 movies and he's still trying, you know. never mind the actors who actually audition and, you know, toil over for that 5-minute role, you know, who move up because of their actual acting like skill. But, so I'm like, I have nothing against Abhishek Bachchan. I mean, I'm sure he hates me. That's just fine by me.
But you once said that I once wrote something after an actress committed suicide, and I later got a call from a director asking if I knew what I was doing. Since then, I'm careful about what I write. I stay away from gossips. And a good comedian is someone who can say something serious in a funny way. However, most guys like to just play with puns. And this is what you said. Now, Karan, when you are tweeting, obviously, and you know, there are times where something comes up in the news or you see something and we get excited and we're like, oh God, really funny joke, I'm going to put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to sort of ground yourself. And how do you sort of create that balance of grounding yourself and trying to put funny content out there? And how do you draw the line?
How do you draw the line? I mean, that's a question for the times, you know, that's a question for everybody has their own line. You know, when there's a comic, I think it's Tosh, Daniel Tosh, when he starts his specials, he talks about this. He's like, I don't know where your line is. My line, I know where my line is. And if our lines don't meet, that's not my fault. I think we are very sensitive in India. So, you know, like, for example, with Tanmay Bhatt and the Snapchat that he made on Lata Mangeshkar Sachin, I found that hilarious. Because my line is that, sure, make fun of them. If Lata Mangeshkar is calling Sachin something and he's like, hey, you look like that chick from Game of Thrones because you're so old, I thought it was funny. You know, it's not like it spiraled into this prime time news debate where Tanmay Bhatt wants Lata Mangeshkar dead somehow. You know, like So you guys, there's two ways. Like, so you can say, you know what, I can hide and run, and in the hope that nobody gets offended, because guess what, today you say 1 + 1 = 3 and people will come at you saying you idiot. You know, like, it's everybody's going, there's no way you will not get trolled. You guys are women. You are so easy to troll. You'll just have to go after your sexuality. Just have to go about, it's so simple. It doesn't need anything to attack a woman anymore, right? So as a comedian, when I write a joke, when I make a joke, of course there is right now on Twitter, like, my jokes are very PC, especially the last 3-4 months. They've been very, 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 very politically correct and in the middle, especially politically, because I'm tired of fighting. And that's what...
But, you know, you say this, but in June of this year, there was a little reference made by you that actually got blown way out of proportion, or maybe if you said something related to the Army Public School attack in Pakistan, and you later deleted. Right, and, you know, your tweet was basically something about your Twitter mentions blowing up, like, schools in Pakistan. And a lot of people were furious, and you kept insisting that it was just a joke. But how do you avoid slip-ups like these? Because you do,
It's not a slip-up. Here's the thing. You have to understand. So I don't think you guys are hearing what I'm saying. There's an intent. Joke has. So now, for example, if I'm a comedian or I'm anybody and saying, oh my God, I hope this plane crashes and all these crying kids crash with it, that I'm sitting in a plane, am I saying that I want the plane to crash? What is my intent behind what I'm saying? So when I say my mentions are blowing up like a school in Pakistan, am I saying that I want a school in Pakistan to blow up? Is my intention to say that I'm encouraging this kind of behavior, or I appreciate this kind of behavior? Or in any way, am I rewarding this kind of behavior? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying schools blow up in Pakistan. That's what's on the news. Schools have blown up in Pakistan. I'm not fabricating it, right? Now what I'm doing is I'm touching on something that's very, very sensitive for people. So
Because little kids are involved, kids are dying, and
it's always about the kids,
like,
right?
You made fun of
about the kids.
It's like you made fun of the kids dying. Yeah.
But how did I make fun of the kids dying? Did I make fun of the kids dying?
No, that's the response you received. Like, hey, this is not cool because you're making fun of the fact that little children died.
But I wasn't, I was making fun of the fact that...
No, you weren't, Karan. But what we're trying to say is that that's how people like to nitpick, right?
Yeah.
And that's when everything gets out of proportion. And even we were just talking about Abhishek Bachchan, and things got a bit seemed to get a bit personal. But does that usually happen with you, Karan, where you go out and you say, you know, I'm just going to make a lighthearted joke. This is what I want to do. I want to make people laugh. And then all of a sudden, you're insulting someone's mother or someone's father. Like, does it always end up like that?
No, not at all. I mean, you guys have picked like maybe 2 or 3 instances in the last 5 or 6 years where it's happened. So it's actually quite uncommon. And also, I think you guys have to understand that jokes, where do jokes come from? There's no such thing as a good joke and a bad joke. The source is not different. The source is the same. When you have a topic in your mind and there's a good joke and a bad joke, that whole idea of you should have your limits, you know, and I've been on the news debating this constantly with people who don't make jokes. And people who don't make jokes or people who don't write comedy don't get it. That there's only one cauldron and jokes come out of that cauldron. That's it. There is no, and so you can be that person who censors yourself right up top and that limits you. Or, you know, you can go down the road and test the waters. I know comedians who have said very, very simple jokes, and they've had to leave Mumbai and go back to their city because the Shiv Sena is suddenly at their door.
Yep.
So what triggers somebody, you never know. So as a comedian, am I constantly, if I have to keep censoring myself, oh boy, you're going, you can't survive then. Then you might as well quit and go back and wear pants.
If you were always saying just the right things, then would Bollywood Gandu have the same kind of following today?
Exactly. Then
would you be doing?
Yeah, you would. Then you'd just be Bollywood Hangama.
As Bollywood Gandu, have you ever thought that maybe praising people's talent. If you've seen that before, I mean, I'm saying this because probably people who go through your Twitter timeline right now probably think, okay, this guy just bashes people and he makes fun. But have you ever thought about,
you know, people call you a troll? People, like, even on news channels refer to you as a troll. So have you ever tried to be humorous by praising people?
Sure, but I mean, look, a troll is the president of the United States of America. So it's not. Yeah. So why is being a troll that bad?
Did you practice that, Karan?
Oh, you have a point there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, guys, I'm telling you, that's just being honest. It's because this word, this negativity about trolling, oh, you're just a troll, da da da. I mean, first of all, you know, the account used to be anonymous. Now I'm not even anonymous anymore. And it's become the point where I just stopped caring. I don't care about these people in Bollywood. I don't care about their fans who will just come at you when you just, you know, you say anything. There'll be the Hrithik army and the Saifians and the SR Kanes. And then now we have politicians. You know, we have the BJP clan and the liberals or the pseudo liberals and the pseudo feminists. It's how many groups? And so right now it's all about tiptoeing. You know, you're walking on eggshells, especially on Twitter. You're walking on eggshells constantly with whatever. So mm-hmm. I've come to the conclusion that I tell every YouTuber, don't read the comments. Don't read the comments. That's it. If you want to be successful at YouTube, don't read the comments. The audience doesn't know what they want. They're just there to like crib and complain. And if they like it, great. If they don't, whatever.
And Karan, when you are, you know, on Twitter and you're making fun of celebrities and Bollywood actors and actresses, what do you think goes through their minds for them to say, okay, I'm going to block this guy? Is it an ego thing? Is it a pride thing?
I don't know. You have to ask the person doing the block. I think by now people know that I never, and if they block me, you know, well and good, but like I never meant any harm. And now the way how vicious things are, and how vicious people can be on Twitter and Facebook, that what I did was so mild in comparison. Like, they probably appreciate me a lot more now.
But can you name one person in the industry who's been a good sport, you know, even when you took the piss out of them?
Oh, so many. So many. I can name several people. Sonam Kapoor has, Karan Johar. Abhishek Bachchan used to. Then suddenly he went. who else?
But hasn't Sonam Kapoor at one point in 2010, hasn't she blocked you as well?
No. She still follows me.
I think I saw a tweet by you in 2010 saying, oh, how cute that Sonam Kapoor blocked me.
Yeah, I think with Sonam, I think she realized that maybe unblocking me and following me would make me like take it easy on her. I think that was her strategy. But there's a bunch of people. You see, at this point, you know, this Bollywood is such a, like I said, like I've moved on from that. You know, the whole, it was like a rage. When I first started the account and I was anonymous and I'd go for a meeting and I'd see a bunch of people like sitting all around one screen watching and reading my tweets and laughing at my tweets. It was quite it was quite surreal, you know. It's like hearing your song on the radio for the first time.
It's like you're a ninja. It's like you're Superman. No one knows who you are.
Yeah, yeah. And then that was great. But you know, that was 2010, 11. I mean, at some point, I was much younger, and I've grown so much as a comedian. I've grown so much as a writer. That stuff now, I've moved on from it, you know. So that's why I've got a couple of people with me who are now helping me write the jokes and stuff like that. I tweet my mind from my, I created new accounts like 3 months ago, new Twitter accounts, a new Instagram, and a new Facebook account. And I started from scratch again.
And why did you do that?
Oh, because I wanted to just speak my mind without debating right-wingers and fanboys.
Oh, okay. And Karan, considering what you do, I'm sure you've been in situations where you've been threatened, and I won't be surprised if your account has even been suspended on Twitter. But has anything really sort of bad happened, almost to the point of losing your brand?
My account's never been suspended. Why would it be suspended? I've not broken any rules.
I say this, Karan, because in a country like India, where we have people who worship Salman Khan and who worship a lot of celebrities, you know, people would be very easy to say, okay, like, you know, to complain about your content. And we've seen it happen with Alt Cricket, for example, where he wrote a Virat Kohli joke and Virat Kohli fans got offended, and that sort of messed things up for him. So this is why
and they reported him, and as a result his account got suspended with almost like 900.
I see what you guys say. No, it's never gonna happen. My account is verified. Why would it get suspended? That's the exact opposite of it's the exact opposite. And I'm very close to people in Twitter. I'm very close to people in Facebook. I work with a lot of these people now. So the chance of my account ever getting suspended is pretty close to zero, or ever. With all cricket, that I think that's definitely the exception. It's not the norm. I think what happened with his account and the fact that he's still not able to get it back is ridiculous. I think a little hue and cry should have been made about that. But I should talk to people on Twitter about that. It's strange.
Karan, how do you feel about Kamal R. Khan?
I think when Dr. Frankenstein made his monster, he didn't know what he was getting into. And we are all Dr. Frankenstein, each and every one of us. And we're all responsible. We're all responsible for him.
Yeah, and he's one person who really gets blocked, you know, left, right and center on Twitter and other social media channels. And he, you know, reviews movies all the time, much like you do. So my question is, at the end of the day, if anyone were to equate your work to what he does, just the movie review part, how would you react?
I'd be like, you should have paid more attention in school. That's all. See, I'll tell you what, Kamal R. Khan, you know who he is? He's the kind of guy, he's attention, you know, the attention that he gets, that's what he craves. You know, I'm a bald guy. I have no intention of getting my hair fixed, you know, I'm happy. But he's got his hair transplant done. You know, like he wants to be the guy that, like, he wants to be admired. He wants to be respected. And he doesn't know how to get it. And the thing with him is that I've seen him humiliated personally in person. I've seen him, what's his producer name? The guy who made Rajneeti, Prakash Jha.
Right.
Yeah. So the movie in Rajneeti, the title for that movie was actually owned by Kamal R. Khan. And, that conversation was hilarious. He made Kamal R. Khan sit on the floor.
Wow.
Yeah. Literally sit on the floor. Yeah. So every time I make a KRK joke, he calls me. Do you guys know this?
How does he have your personal number?
I don't know. He's got my number and he calls me up and I get to hear a bouquet of you know, choice garlic.
Really?
It's quite funny, actually. Yeah,
so and the prank on your YouTube channel where it was a conversation between you and Kamal R. Khan, that was actually real.
That wasn't me, actually. That was an actual call that was going viral and I just decided to animate it.
Oh, okay.
I wish I had the foresight to record him when he calls me, but he also calls me from a different number. And he makes it a point to, like, he's like, eh, Karan, this, that, and the other. Obviously, I don't want to, since your mom will be hearing, I don't want to go verbatim here. But it's great because he calls me and I'm like, I was like, wow, man, I love it. I love how I get off his nerves. It's so simple.
Yeah, the point is, you know, getting a reaction, whatever kind of reaction it is, at the end of the day, if you've elicited a reaction from someone, you've made them think.
Yep. Oh, you guys, that's a Louis C.K. quote right there. So KRK, like I said, KRK is something that, you know, what's that? He's like, it's like playing with fire with that guy. You know, you have no idea. You know, when his movie was made, Deshdrohi, it was funded through dubious means.
Mm.
And, you know, so these are the kind of characters that you don't want to, like, really engage. And unfortunately, in our thirst for lowbrow, you know, like, I was never, Bollywood Gandhi was never going to be that. Bollywood Gandhi was never going to be what KRK has become, you know. It was always about the joke. What's the joke? How can I make something funny out of this, you know? For him, it's just how can I be, how can I sort of get my way, you know? How can I have influence over people and change, I don't know what he wants out of his you know, movie reviews or whatever.
And Karan, most of your movie reviews, the YouTube channel, we see that why this movie sucks, and obviously most of them are taking the piss.
Right.
I'm just curious to know, like, have you ever genuinely liked any Bollywood movie by any chance?
I've liked a few. The last movie that I thought Dangal was fine, and there's nothing wrong with Dangal. Before Dangal, unfortunately, we don't make very good movies, right? So this year has been quite disappointing. This year I saw Shubh Mangal Savdhan. Which is honestly quite disappointing, and even though people are like, oh, it's really good, but it made no sense. The third act was ridiculous. We don't know how to end movies, and we don't know how to really create characters. I saw a movie called Stanley Ka Dabba, which was, I think, one of the, like, such a great movie. I loved it. It was such a strong movie. Which was a couple of years ago. Piku was fun. Pink was good.
But Karan, so you are listing a good chunk of movies that you have liked and you have enjoyed. But so have you considered making a movie review for movies that you've liked, or do you not think that
people
it would have
doing
the same?
That? Yeah, people are already doing that. It doesn't fit the... So you have to understand the brand Bollywood Gandu stands for something, right? Like, for example, Miss Malini. If you look at Miss Malini and Bollywood Gandu, I think it's very, very similar. Only she's, like, way, like, bigger setup. Like, she has people who write blogs for her. So, can Miss Malini... Let's say Miss Malini walks into a movie theater and she hates the movie. What will Miss Malini say? You are very good in it, or something. She'll make up something, or she won't post anything, right? So it works the opposite. I Alia Bhatt follows me, and I've DM'd her every time I've seen her. I saw her in Highway. I thought it was a good movie, and I told her.
And I'm
like, listen, I'm not going to tweet out publicly, but I think you did a great job in it. So and that's it.
And there was it would be quite difficult, right, as well, for you know, based on your brand, to make a movie review funny when it's actually good. So it's easier to take the piss, right, than because your brand is really funny.
That's the idea, right? So if there is no victim, then there is no joke. There's got to be a victim for a joke to work. That's why there are no right-wing comedians, because for right-wingers, this is how it is. It should not change. The status quo works for them. When it comes to liberal-minded, that's why most comedians are liberal-minded, because liberal-minded people want a utopia. They want things to change. They want equality. They want equal distribution of wealth, and so they see the holes in our society. That's why you see.
So off the top of your head, can you list like about three elements that you think need to be removed from Bollywood films to make them better? Just need to go.
I think first is what needs to be added. It's important. Okay. Very simple. Very simple. You guys have heard there's a movie being made of the 1983 World Cup. Last week it was signed. Kabir Khan is the director. Ranveer Singh is playing Kapil Dev, who was the captain of the team.
Yeah.
So great. Movie's been signed. The actors are there. There's no script. All right. There's no script for the movie. So sign movies. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Shah Rukh never saw a script for Harry Met Sejo. He just signed it because MTR said, let's do it. So first up, there's got to be a script. You got to have a script. And for a script to happen, you have to have writers. You know, we do not appreciate writers in this place. Writers, there's no structure for writers. There's no scope of learning. Everybody is literally swimming in their own little bubble, in their own well, and disconnected from reality. Producers don't want to pay writers, and even when they pay writers, the structure is terrible. You know, they'll give you like such a piddly sum to start off with, and they expect things to happen in 15 days. So there is no idea of what it takes to write a film. So I have a friend, I'll give you such a comparison. My friend who used to, he wanted to be a writer, he lived in the US, and he would review other people's scripts for executives at HBO or Miramax or whatever. And he would get $50 per script, and he would write a four-pager of what he thought about the script, the story, the characters, and if it worked or not. Because studio execs don't have time to read the full script. He did that. And over time, there's one executive at HBO who really likes his reviews. And he got hired there. And now he reads 700 to 1,000 scripts a year. Pilots. His job is to commission one pilot a year. I'll give you the exact opposite example. Yesterday I ran into a friend who's a director, and he's got an idea, he's got a story, he's got the money to from Amazon to shoot a pilot, but he has no one to write it. He cannot find a writer. And what will happen when he finds a writer? He will try to lowball him. He will try to, save 50,000 rupees to there's only one problem, and this is it. This is the mother of all problems. You just gotta get, writers are the most crucial part. It's the backbone of your story, your script, your movie. You know, it's like having a shitty drummer in your band. You know, the whole band sucks.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Karan, you did mention at the beginning that you might want to get into scripting films yourself. So if you ever did write a script for a film, what would we expect from that?
You would expect, well, first of all, of course, comedy. I like underdogs. I'm actually in love with underdogs. I think underdogs are, I love watching people who don't have the skills to succeed, you know? Case in point, Lagan, which had characters like Kachra, he's a Dalit with a twisted hand, and he didn't have the skills, societal skills, or the physical skills to succeed, but he makes it, and that makes for such a great moment. Yep. It was treated dramatically, but it could easily have been done comedically. So then at the back layer, you would see a satire, a take on our society. So something to do with the way I perceive, you know, for example, politically or socially or maybe even religious.
Right. Coming back to your career as a comedian now, which came first, actually, SNG Comedy or Bollywood Gandu?
Which came first? See, Bollywood Gandu was just a Twitter handle. I didn't expect it to be so big, you know, grow so fast. It was just me creating a Twitter handle, literally, and just going, joke. And SNG Comedy was, the idea of Shits and Giggles was that I wanted to try out stand-up. And it all worked hand in hand. I'd just come back from the States, so I wasn't very aware of, like, Indian pop culture and how fragmented it was. And I was like, you know what, if I need to make jokes about India, I need to know, have some idea what's going on. So, and then the second part is I need to actually perform. Where do I perform? I need to create a stage for myself. So SNG became that label I used to go to bars. I literally used to walk into bars and shake hands with the manager and be like, how can we make comedy happen here? So he's like, okay, fine. Tuesday at 9 o'clock, we put some chairs up and let's see how many people show up. So slowly we had 30 and 40 and 50 people. And within a year, we were selling out shows. And I was hosting shows for everybody in the scene, you know, whether it's Aditi or Tanmay or all the SNG boys or the EIC boys, or everybody was doing it. This is before all the click started.
And Karan, SNG comedy plays a big role in, you know, the sort of alternative comedy that we see booming in India right now, you know, with AIB and EIC comedy, and it's extremely different to the mainstream comedy we see on Indian TV. So what is your take on the comedy shows we come across on Indian TV these days?
That's not comedy, that's noise. No, yeah, because there is no comedy. I mean, I don't know, when I meet these people in TV who are making, you know, I've worked with Sub TV, I've actually sat on a Kapil Sharma show because they were like testing me out as a writer about 3 or 4 years ago, and I sat on that show and I watched it and it didn't make any sense to me. It's so lame-brained, you know, and I don't blame them. I think, honestly, I blame our general stupidity as a culture. We in America, you have a luxury of a unified pop culture.
Right.
You know, when something happens, everybody knows what happens. For example, Rihanna does something. Everyone knows that Rihanna did something because it's the news. So if you have a great joke on it, you can do that. People will get. But here, it's so fragmented. You know, our pop culture, if it happens to one person, then there's several people who never heard of that. And it just, so you have to look inward. That's where our comedy comes in. Our comedy comes, if you look at any sketch on SNG, it comes from how I feel personally about something. So, for example, if jokes were food, the idea came to me, there's a sketch we did, if jokes were food, when I was sitting on the news panels arguing for Tanmay, that people like, this is offensive and Tanmay should be put in jail for this and he's disrespecting our idols and this and that and the other. And I was just like, this, you know, what if jokes are food? Well, you just wouldn't eat it, right? If you didn't like beef, you just wouldn't eat beef. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't stop the guy in the next table eating beef, which is what's happening here, by the way.
Which is exactly what's happening.
exactly. So I mean, I was. This is the pre-beef ban. So that's one. If you look at every sketch that's on SNG, and I'm very proud of all those sketches. You know, whether it gets 5 views or 100,000 views, it doesn't really matter because each sketch has a very good point. Mm-hmm. Even there's one sketch that no one has seen. It's one sketch that's really to me. It's called "Is This Gay?" Or it's all of us in us. I think this. It's called "This Isn't Gay." The sketch is called "This Isn't Gay," and it's all of SNG, all the SNG guys sitting in the sauna, all of us. And dude, I'm just like in a towel with Varun. One guy has a shirt on. One guy has a shirt and jeans on.
Right.
The idea hit me. I was like, you know, we all have different lines, right? You're talking about a line of what is offensive or not, but we also have a different line of what is homophobic or gay or what not. You know, what and especially guys, because guys are very confused about this. Like, what does it mean, man? What does it mean? Yeah. So I wrote that sketch when it came to me. Like, what if you had a bunch of guys with different lines? And what conflict would I get out of that? And where could the comedy come from that? So that's how my brain works. You know, it's like, how can I make fun of something that's a societal problem in India, right here, right now, that affects us? There was a friend zone sketch I wrote, which is simple sketch about how universal, how dating is like a job interview. We had Kritika Kamra, who's lovely, who's so awesome to work with. She's a TV actress. She was so great. She came for a rehearsal And because I'm a little anal about this stuff, I just want to get my actors to make sure that, you know, they know their lines, that they get the vibe of what I want out of the sketch. So, most directors and films don't get that luxury. So I'm pretty lucky that way that I get to do that in my sketches.
Yeah, because, you know, Karan, when I watch Comedy Nights with Kapil, it just seems like they're just paying Sidhu Paji mm-hmm. to sit there and laugh. And that's all really what the show is. So how do you think the standard of comedy can be raised in India, considering we're looking at a very big population?
I think it has to be regional. It can't be in English. Standard comedy, obviously, the way it's growing, Hindi is also growing. It has to be regional. And unfortunately, just like what has become in America, like Dave Chappelle is the last universal comedian that America has. Now, from now on, all the comedians are segmented. The Mexican comedian, the brown comedian, the white guy comedian. You know, like you go to a white guy comedian, only white people show up. You go to Dave Chappelle is the last guy where even white people go and see him. After that, all the remaining black guys only black people see, and that's because Their worlds are so different. The black world and the white world are so different. You know, growing up, their lives are so different. So, and that's the same thing for us. Somebody who grows up in Orissa and someone who grows up in Mumbai, I mean, how they can't relate. It's a different world.
Yeah.
So that's what will happen to comedy. And I remember talking about this on the AIB podcast too. I was the first guest on the AIB podcast when they first recorded. That was interesting. And I remember telling the guys on that podcast that there'll be a point where things will go mainstream, and then comedians will have a choice to either backtrack and run away, and, you know, or take it head on and fight. You know, that's what George Carlin did in the 70s. He got arrested, and he came back out and did the same set again, and he got arrested again. And the result of that was that the free speech sort of part of their constitution came into play and protected comedians in the 80s. And that's why 80s was the golden age of stand-up comedy in America. So our golden age will come only with legislation that protects comedians, and an audience that demands more, you know, and that's happening already. The audience is demanding more.
But there's a similar trend with talk shows as well, Karan, where once upon a time when I was a child, I used to watch Rendezvous with Simi Garewal, and she really dug deep into her guests and brought out mm-hmm. these raw and honest stories. And now the essence has really been lost because there are so many talk shows and you come across them so much, and there's more like a rapid fire round than getting to know personally what the guest was going through at a certain point in time. What do you really feel about talk shows in India right now?
I mean, see, I think the problem is not talk shows. First of all, talk shows don't work. I mean, you guys know that, right? Outside Coffee with Karan, no other talk show works. Like, that's a fact. No.
Well, I personally am not a big fan of mm-hmm. Coffee with Karan. I think it only works because it's probably with Karan Johar.
Why do you think Coffee with Karan works, actually?
Well, because it makes money for star. That's the business side of things. The reason why it works is because he's able to get as personal as it possibly can on television. Because it's Karan Johar, and he's able to get the people who you see on your screens and you see on the magazine covers and the billboards. And you see them fall, and, you know, you see Alia Bhatt say that Prithvi Raj Chauhan is the president, and you say that Kareena Kapoor says that Stairway to the Moon is Saif's favorite song, which the song doesn't even exist. So that's why do people watch it? It's that, you know, that moment, that shock value, like the Kangana episode this season where she pretty much called Karan out on being, and I agree with her, he is the nepotistic kingpin. Yeah. I mean, I think even he knows that, man. I mean, yeah. It's not like he's denied it. And
I want to post the meme that you posted recently where newbies come into the film industry and Karan Johar is like, ow, ow, ow.
Ow, ow. Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, Karan, everything that you explained that happens on Coffee with Karan is just as you said that the comedy shows on Indian TV is noise. It's kind of similar here because it's noise and it's gossip.
It is absolute gossip.
But what do you think of is it content that's meaningful or
meaningful?
Content that we really need?
Come on, guys. The word meaningful does not exist in the Bollywood vocabulary. I mean, these people that we idolize as Bollywood stars, they're for the most part idiots. I mean, after this nepotism saga, I read a little article that Saif Ali Khan put out. And my God, I can't even remember it, but he used words like genetics. And somehow that Saif Ali Khan genetically, what are you talking about? What rubbish? You know, and it's this sort of, you know, like, for example, Varun Dhawan like denies it. He denies the fact that he has had like help because his last name is Dhawan, you know. And I was like, what world are you guys living in? First step to Bollywood is they have to recognize that there is nepotism. And you know, we've all seen that Judwa has made a lot of money, so clearly the audience doesn't care. The audience doesn't give a rat's ass that somebody's son. They just want to see good content.
And Karan, do you think that podcasting is just as an important medium as comedy to move our generation forward?
I think so. I think what podcasting does is, you see, there's a pro and con to it. The pro is, of course, that it lets average people like you and I get our voice across. You know, we have something to say. There's a need to, you know, sort of reach out to people and present our point of views. You know, that's why we do podcasts, whether it's a comedy podcast or not. The problem is that now it's become so niche, you can find a podcast that suits your every sort of POV. If you're a Nazi now, you'll find a Nazi podcast. You know, so that's the con that it's become.
Yeah.
There's no regulation, so you can literally say anything you want, and you end up with the info wars. You know, so I think podcast is very crucial. It's not gained in India as much, which is why we do our podcast on YouTube. You know, we had an option to go to Savan or Ghana or some shit like that. But we didn't do any of that because it's just, I don't feel like they don't know how to give us. See, for us, it's like, how can we get to the most people? That's the most important, not the money or the branding or whatever. How can we get our podcast the most ears possible, exactly, the most eyes possible?
Yeah.
And so in a sense, the business of podcasting hasn't really caught up in India.
We are also struggling with that currently because a lot of people don't really grasp the concept, especially when AIB comes out. AIB is called the AIB podcast and they have a YouTube channel and everyone's sitting and talking and it's basically a talk show, but it's on YouTube. And people, whenever we approach people now to get them as guests sometimes in India, just in India, they ask us, do you have a studio in Mumbai? Do you need us to come somewhere? And we're like, no, this is a podcast and this needs to be audio content. And a lot of people don't grasp that. And we feel that because there are other podcasts in India which have mainly gone into YouTube, it's changing. Yeah. And we don't know how we can get the idea across that this is supposed to be audio content primarily, but will people consume it?
I think people will consume it. See, the thing is, the business side of things has to make it happen, right? Right now, you guys are posting on SoundCloud, I'm guessing?
No, we partner with Audio iTunes. Boom. Yeah, Audio iTunes Boom. And Audio Boom, yeah.
Okay. So that's one layer of things. For example, Audio Boom is not something that everybody has. If somebody has to hear about you guys, right? As opposed to do both of you guys have YouTube apps on your cell phones?
Yeah.
That's where it is. For me, the clincher was I decided when I thought that I wanted to do a podcast with SNG, I was like, okay, we could easily do an audio podcast too, but we did it on purpose because we want our faces front and center because we want to book those shows. You know, we want to book that work, whether it's working with a brand or working or getting, doing a writing gig with someone, we want to make sure that we are front and center. We also give people the SoundCloud option. But that's very few people. Very few people who are, listening in their cars or on their trains or something. That, they don't want to eat up their data. But
you make a really good point because YouTube is an app that everyone has on their phones. iTunes is something everyone has on their phones if they have an iPhone. But podcasting, if you want to listen to a podcast, then we are available on all podcasting apps. But you have to download a podcasting app and you should be the kind of person who listens to podcasts already.
Yep. I think getting into podcasts, getting people accustomed to a podcast is a hurdle for sure. You guys have a bigger hurdle too because I think that disadvantage that you guys are not on YouTube. You know, you guys could end up just putting up the audio on YouTube.
And yeah, we're in two different countries, so coming in the same YouTube video is quite difficult most of the time.
No, what I'm suggesting is that you have a blank video basically, you have three photos, like the photo of your guest, your photo, both your photos, and whoever's speaking, just have that photo pop in. So it's basically still just the audio with a little bit of a small amount of editing. And just to have that YouTube presence, and what people can do is keep the YouTube video playing in the background and listen to it while they're at work or whatever. I think you should always go with the option that's got the biggest reach because that's how your podcast will grow. That's the only way.
Now, Karan, we both follow Bollywood Gando YouTube channel and we find your videos to be hilarious. You know, you should keep up the good work. It's amazing. But I specifically wanted to ask you about the editing process because clearly a lot of effort goes into it because I don't know what these shots are called where you're speaking 1 minute and then you put in a shot from Jurassic Park in there and it's really funny and entertaining. But I assume it takes a really long time to find these shots and edit and put them in your videos. So do you do that on your own or is there a team specifically editing these videos for you?
So everything that you see, about 50% of those videos are by myself, and then 50% of people that I've worked with. It's just difficult to keep guys, because you know I get these young boys who want to leave. So I love editing actually. I just loved it. I love like sitting on. It's almost like a painting, because all I have is these raw files of my reactions and these strange clips that I found. And then plastering them together into this coherent sort of weaving the story, it really cracks me up. And the way I edit is, I need to make myself laugh, you know. And so if I can watch it for the 15th time and still smile, I'm okay. Then whether it gets 3 views or 5 million views makes no difference to me. You know, that's all relevant.
And your feature's called The Dope, and even some others like Worst Indian Songs videos, they're just hilarious. And I remember bursting out laughing in a public place when I heard you talk about the ad for an underwear that purifies farts. Like, how do you find all this content and all these cringy Indian ads and videos that you make fun of? Like, where do you find it?
I mean, most of it just pops on social media itself. I haven't shot a dope episode for like a year now, but when I was doing it every week, people would just send me videos. And then, you know, I'm the kind of guy, if you come over to my place, we'll pop open like a couple of beers, and I'll probably play like some funny YouTube videos for you. You know, like at least I used to. Now we have Netflix and Amazon and all that stuff. But back in the day, I would just play YouTube videos and this crazy things. And I always thought, you know, how can I make a show that sort of, it's about the internet. Everything about it lives and dies on the internet. You know, it can't exist on anything else. It has to exist in that medium. You know, it's a show that it cannot exist on an OTT platform. It can't go on TV. You know, it's got all the. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to create like a really biting, hard hitting show about like how everything sucks and everything needs to change. But then I realized that intensity is something that you can't do solo. You know, I'm trying to come up with the clips, and then I'm writing the jokes, and then I'm shooting it myself, and then I'm cutting it myself, and trying to do it once a week. It becomes quite hectic.
Yeah, and you know, first of all, I'm so happy that Meenal is so British. You have no idea, Karan. I'm so happy that she said the word fart on the podcast right now.
Fart. She's a fart. Fart. Not flatulence.
But you know what I like best about you, Karan? This is something that I've seen in interviews that you've given, questions you've answered previously. People sometimes come up to you every now and then and they attack you, saying that you used to be sexist and that you were a horrible person before you got popular and that your popularity tamed you down. And personally, I would feel offended by such comments, but you respond with a simple sentence like, I agree with you, or that you have a point, or agreed. But do you actually believe that you were all of those things in the past, or do you say that you agree with an attacker just to shut them up?
No, I mean, I think people don't realize that, you know, what there's an evolution of a whoever you are, you know, whether you're a writer or a stand-up comedian or a podcaster, you evolve. And Louis C.K. did this brilliantly. You know, he spoke about, there's a video that he has on YouTube where he talks about George Carlin. And that, you know, that's a video that I always like refer to the back of my head when I think about. Because like there are certain topics or jokes that I'd like, for example, engineering jokes, you know, that I would not make today. Like I would do 5 years ago, no problem. Yeah. But or like go on stage and make fun of Anil Kapoor being a hairy guy, you know, like, oh, that's really funny. But I did it. I used to have a punchline that was Anil Kapoor. It related to my hair. I had a hair joke but I had all these jokes. And so now it's all evolved. Now, like, I actually started writing yesterday in some stand-up. And my stand-up has got to the point where I don't even know how to make it funny anymore, because it's become so serious. All of it is because I'm talking about stuff that, like, you know, like, for example, I'm talking about the fact that I have, like, no real guy friends. I actually have no real guy friends, and it's become a dilemma, because there's so much estrogen around my life that I just for once, like, just we, like, so which is why this weekend I got a couple of my guy friends and we went out to a friggin' club. Oh, my God. And I think,
do your writing sessions just turn into crying about your life sessions?
I mean, that's where the comedy comes from, fear.
That's what the comedy is.
Yeah, it comes from fear. And so what do I fear? There's a lot of things I fear. I mean, death is the first fear that comes to everyone's mind. So I write about that, but then I'm like, okay, it's too morbid. And there's a couple of comedians already talking about death. So I was like, it's too morbid. Let me talk about something else. So I start talking about like trolling and stuff like that, like, you know, something that people try to relate to. But it's still there's a fear at the base of it. It has to be a fear. And earlier, You evolve, and people are like, hey, you used to be sexist. I'm like, what do you mean used to? I mean, yeah, like, that's, being sexist, you know, I think, again, it comes to intent. I'm not a sexist person. I tell my wife every day that I'm very happy if she makes a lot of money and I can sit at home. I'm happy to be the you know, the domesticated husband taking care of the house duties.
That's my husband's dream. He tells me that the day, yeah, you know, you make enough for me to just sit at home and play PS4 games every day, that's the dream.
Well, I mean, PS4 games every day, I think it's basically like taking care of the house and all that stuff. But my point is that I'm not a sexist person in my personal life. So when I do make a sexist joke, again, the intent is never that. But because there's so much sexism, it's misconstrued. It's, you know, I give you guys of like, you know, have you guys seen Anchorman? Will Ferrell's movie Anchorman?
Yeah. No, I haven't.
what's the last like sort of slapstick type of comedy that you guys saw? Is there anything comes to mind recently?
I can't really.
So what I was trying to get to was that there are a lot of characters in comedies that are sexist characters. You know, Anchorman is the first one that comes to mind, which is a very, very famous movie where it's a man grappling with his own sexism. You know, and when he says sexist things, this is the difference between good writing and bad writing. A good writer can create characters that say sexist things, but is not sexist. And that's such a difficult thing to do because in his worldview, that's how things work. It's like Peter Griffin from Family Guy. Or Homer Simpson from The Simpsons.
I watched Backstrom recently, and there was this Backstrom, and there was this part where someone said, "How can you be working?" Someone said to a woman working with Backstrom, "How can you be working with him? He's sexist." And she says, "Well, he's not sexist. He just hates everybody." And
yeah,
that's exactly your point, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what. And so one thing is that sexism and sex, and actually sex in itself in India, because we are so like backward when it comes to sex. When we do comedy about it, it tends to be cringeworthy.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up with a grand masti or, you know, Tushar Kapoor type comedy. And it never feels, it doesn't feel evolved because we are immature when it comes to sex. You know, that's why when you see a sex scene in an American movie or a Korean movie, then you can say, okay, you know what, there's a little level to art to it. But when you see two Indians going at it, you're like, oh, go.
Can we not look at it? Our parents also feel really uncomfortable no matter what it is.
Exactly. So we are kind of self-hating kind of people. We you know, like when I went diving, there were two women there in Salwar Kameez. They wanted to dive in Salwar Kameez. And, you know, the instructor's like, listen, there's nobody down there. and it's not like I'm wearing a swimsuit. We're wearing rubber suits. You know, so you all can wear the rubber suit. We all wear them anyway.
That's true, actually.
But they just refuse to. Like, no, we can't wear skin tight. And so this thing about how we are Indian, we are so backward sexually. And the idea that a woman, oh my God. I love women who are sexual. Because nothing makes a man, Indian man, more uncomfortable than a sexual woman. It is hilarious. We just did a podcast with Priya Malik, like maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and Priya, she's a former Big Boss contestant, and she's very open about her sexuality, and she's like, you know what, I love watching porn. And I could feel the other guys in the podcast go, we do not know how to process this, women who have feelings, what is going on, you know, like, So I love it, I love women who are like just totally honest about it, because guys just get totally knotted up, they don't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
And so Indian men have this problem, and there's some ingrained in their head that it's printed in the head of kids that girls don't want to get with guys, and it's only guys who want to get with girls, and it's just this this sheep and wolf syndrome, you know, like they're the sheep and we're the wolves.
And Karan, when you were once asked if you guys earned enough from your YouTube videos, you said, and I quote, you said, "Now we spend way more in production. It's a stupid business model, honestly, and the audience has been ruined by high production sketches. And the only ones to blame are we, the creators, and that's why you keep seeing brands popping up in videos these days. It's the only way to sustain." But today, Karan, you have quite a big team. You know, you guys go on tour. So are video sponsorships enough to sustain you at the moment? Or do you think anything has changed since you made that statement?
So one thing has changed, that we've stopped. If you look at the date of that statement and you look at my channel, the sketches from that date have stopped. We haven't produced any sketches at all. So what have we done in the past? We made a show for Amazon Prime Video, which is available in India right now.
Right.
So there's a lot of that. So right now we've moved from, the idea right now for me is, as a creator, is how can I make stuff on YouTube for as cheap as possible? And then how can I get my big ideas on Amazon or Netflix or, you know, Alt Balaji or any of these platforms? There's so many now. There's like 8 platforms that we have in Mumbai. So that's because they pay for the content. They pay you upfront so that you can use that money to produce the content that you're trying to create.
Right. And, you know, going back to what you just said about women and sexuality, and you made another statement that really, really stood out to us. And it was that till India gets to a point when the majority of women in cities, towns and villages feel safe going to the movie theater without husbands and male escorts, women-centric movies are always going to suffer. So how do you think, how long do you think it'll take for us to get there? Because do you think we're there yet?
Oh, no. We're not there yet. I mean, see, and also, I mean, I live in a different world than most Indian women do. I live in a world where if my wife wants to go do, she calls me at 12 o'clock at night, says, listen, I'm out drinking. I'm like, yeah, whatever, go drink, man. But that's me, and I know most men are not like that. It's very difficult for a woman. I mean, I know somebody who doesn't let his wife out to buy vegetables. She literally is trophy, and he just keeps her inside his house, and she just, her job is to bear him children and just babysit the children.
Well, Karan, how old could this person be? I'm curious, actually.
That's the problem, no? They're all, he's like 19, 20, and she's like 15, 16, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. So when I was 19, I was dating someone who actually told me and that was the time when I joined college, right? So I was 17 probably. And this guy told me that, well, if you need something, you need to ask your roommates to go out and get it for you because it's not safe for you to leave the campus. And he was like, right. So I know exactly what you're talking about right now because it's in our generation. It's in our generation, this kind of mentality. Which is,
well, I mean, you can look at it from, I see, and that's a part of one thing that you look at from both sides, right? I look at it from like, okay, if this is Mumbai, right? I feel like Mumbai is a safe city compared to where, like, for example, if I was living in Gurgaon or Noida, I mean, like, hey, you know, I think my wife would know better than to be out drinking by herself at 12.
Right. Right.
Just because there are nightmare stories that happen then, and you know, it's just how, you know, there's a crisis in this country because, you know, the root of the problem, and this is my personal theory, the root of our problem is arranged marriage. Because what arranged marriage does is it doesn't allow men to grow the social skills to woo a woman. It doesn't allow them to, they don't learn how to talk to a woman. Like, actually go up and ask her out, you know, and like, and engage her in a way that's not sexual. You know?
Right. And it's not so, even sexual, weirdly sexual.
Yeah, exactly. No, so for them, when they see a woman, when they see any of you guys or anybody else walking down the street, for them, it's, you're not a human being. It's like a hunter, you know, type of mindset. And, so because of arranged marriage, what has happened is, you know, at the end of the day, your mom's gonna find you a good girl, whatever the frickin' frack that means. I hate that word, by the way, when people say good boy, good girl in marriage. Yeah. It's an Indian thing to do. Because the word good is so, it's meaningless. What does good mean? It means that they do exactly what I do. They're just like me. That's what good means. They're my duplicate in every way except for they're not related to me. So.
Yeah, because that would be weird.
Yeah, that would be weird.
That would just get weird.
Hey, but guess going what? That happens too. People.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so, we're deviating now.
I don't know if Meenal knows about it, but that's an actual thing where But you know, going back to
British.
In many subcultures in India, it's a good match for the girl to marry her mama.
Yeah. It's an actual thing. But, you know, going back to women freely going to movie theaters to watch women-centric movies, I remember when I was in college, I was waiting in line with my friends to watch Dirty Picture with Vidya Balan acting as Silk Smita.
Right.
And there were a bunch of, like, the whole movie theater was filled with men. And a lot of men were trying to sit alone. It was really creepy. And there were a bunch of boys from a college as well who were waiting in line to get the tickets. And they were constantly like Eve teasing us because we as women had shown up to watch a movie where this woman is really seductive. And, you know, so it was during daytime. And that was really weird as well because they were, I guess they were feeling threatened by the fact that women wanted to watch another woman who was really boldly showing her sexuality and, the kind of person she was back then.
It's what you're witnessing and what you witnessed there is a defense mechanism. Because like I said earlier, Indian men don't know how to, they don't know how to like, they don't know how to compute a woman's sexuality. The idea that, that there's this woman, Vidya Balan, on screen where she's, you know, showing her cleavage and she's being a sexual being, that, and we all are sexual beings, so she's being that, she's actually being true to herself as a character, and that's how Silk Smitha was. That makes them so uncomfortable. It, you know, it's like Chandler from Friends.
Yeah.
That's that, it's the only way he knows how to react. So he just goes with a joke because he's so uncomfortable. He doesn't know how else to deal with the situation.
And on top of that, there are other women who want to watch this. How dare they?
And the peer pressure of a man with his boys. Oh boy. You know, so to like, oh, I'm not a wuss. I'll make fun of her. You know, it's like, it becomes a pseudo manly thing. And it's bizarre. I mean, it's totally bizarre. I feel like when I tell people, yeah, I'm a feminist, people look at me like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm a feminist, but I'm not saying that because I want to pick up chicks.
No, we have a blog too, Desi Outsiders, called feminismindia.com. And we have one male contributor who's a student in IIT. He's a 19-year-old boy. And he gets trolled constantly by his classmates and his friends in campus because they make fun of him for being a feminist. And he explains to me that the word is what they have a problem with. They probably...
With the F-E-M. Yep.
Yeah, the feminism term.
Yeah, the F word.
Yeah, the F word is what they don't like. They probably... accept what feminism represents in today's society, but they do not like the fact that he openly calls himself a feminist.
So India has become a place of a good, it's good bad words. Oh, sorry, bad good words. That's what we have come. We've come to, because we have a lot of bad good words. We already know the good bad words. You know, like the F word, the B word. They're good words. I like saying them because it makes me feel less aggressive. You know, when I yell them out. But we have these good words that have become bad. Like, for example, feminism, secularism, liberal. Being a liberal person, now liberals have various nicknames, you know.
Yeah.
So these have become negative things in this country. So we're not too far away. Democracy also will be a negative word.
But Karan, is there a woman-centric movie that you particularly enjoyed and you would urge our listeners to watch?
Movie-centric, female-centric movie. I'm actually looking forward to Tumhari Sulu. It looks interesting. I thought it was really, really cute. I saw the trailer for that. So I haven't seen Dirty Picture, so I can't recommend that.
You
said you watched Pink, right?
Pink was great. But I mean, see, here's the problem with these movies. For us are fantasies. It's escapism. That's the life in India with the traffic and the assholes you meet on the street. It's a tough life, right? In where you guys live, if someone bumps into you, they apologize.
Yep.
Here, if someone bumps into you, they look at you like, what do you do? You have no business standing in the space, you know?
I actually wrote about this recently because 2017 New Year, I was in Edinburgh. We have something called the Edinburgh Hogmanay, which is the entire city comes out and we celebrate and we watch the firecrackers go off from the base of the castle in Edinburgh. And it was amazing. And at the end of it, we all got stuck. And there were people pushing against me, but they were apologizing. And I was just thinking, what would happen in India? And the next day, I read about the Bangalore incident.
Yeah.
The New Year celebration. I was literally doing the exact same thing. I was out on the street celebrating New Year. And if I was doing that in Bangalore, what would have happened to me?
Yeah, exactly. And so the idea of women going out to watch, I mean, we are so far away. And I think we are, you know, the West is sort of, the movies are segmented. You know, there's the kids movies, the animation movies, the action flicks. It's a very, very segmented industry. Every studio has like a dikkat that they'll do 7 types of films a year or something like that. Here, we are still so far behind because, our genres are masala, you know, masala or indie, you know, we don't have genres. That's a problem for Bollywood because the audience isn't involved yet. Because women can't go by themselves. We are nowhere close to getting it solved, by the way. Right now, there's a right-wing group that's in power here. There's more pressure on people. You know, like yesterday, some guy from some Dawood, some Maulana has said that women who get groomed, fatwa on them. So we are in a news cycle of just BS. You know, it's one BS thing after the other. There's a guy called Sakshi Maharaj who's a BJP guy, and this man himself a rape accused. I don't know why people keep going up to him and getting his 2 bits that he has. He says that women shouldn't be doing this. Men and women who are caught kissing in public should be put in jail. So we are still so far away. We're so far away. And this country needs a revolution in a different kind because we have power, the party that's in power and the party that's in opposition, they all are equally spineless. So no, don't expect anything to change anytime soon.
And Karan, finally, for our last question, Karan, what is next for Bollywood Gandu?
I mean, honestly, I think I've outgrown Bollywood Gandu a bit. So for now, it's I'm actually looking forward to like writing some bigger things, some bigger projects. I've done the social media comedian thing. I'm over it now. So that's kind of the past now. So I'm gonna focus a little bit more on my stand up. Maybe do a stand up special next year.
Oh wow!
So yeah, but I'll take some time because I haven't gone on stage for so long.
And you know, Karan, you should come to the Edinburgh Festival because a lot of Indian comedians as well come and they start off over here. It's a really great platform. You should come here. I'll come watch you.
You know, you have one person who will definitely come, Karan.
I'll definitely come watch you.
I was going to be there actually this time, but it didn't materialize. Yeah, it was some brand shoot or something that they wanted me to go to Edinburgh, watch some shows. And I was like, hey, hell yeah, I actually just want to come and watch because I'm so disconnected from the stage. You know, it's like one of those things that you haven't like played a sport for a while and you feel really rusty. And it just takes takes just a little muscle memory to get used to. So with stand up, because I've become, you know, over the years, you get older, you get a little bit more like I said earlier, things aren't funny as they used to be. Like before, everything was funny. Now I'm just like, I'm depressed because I keep reading the news. That's the problem. You should stay away from the news, man. The news is very, very depressing in this country.
So, Karan, if our listeners do want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can tweet at me. Send me a message on Facebook or Instagram. I mean, I'm connected on Snapchat. There's Bollywood Gandu on every single one of them.
And on every single platform. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us, Karan.
Yeah, thank you, Karan.
My pleasure. I hope it was insightful. I don't know what I've said.
No, this has been really delightful. This has really been funny and delightful, especially your voice cracking in between. That was brilliant.
I'm sorry, guys. It just happens. It's just like I have a question. Who am I impersonating?
So guys, it was
Sachin, let the monkey. Sachin.
It's Sachin. Yeah, of course it's Sachin. Yeah. thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You should have said
I know. So I'm retired now and I put on a lot of weight. But it's okay. So people don't notice.
Oh, this has been great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And as always, thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in this week as well. And Karan has really opened our eyes about comedy and this line that has to be drawn. And, you know, we really went into what this line really is about and how it varies from person to person. And above all, he really has provided a very fulfilling conversation around society and culture in India as a whole. So everything we at Desi Outsiders and, by extension, you, our listeners, will definitely find very interesting.
So you can follow Karan at Bollywood Gandu on all social media channels and at Spiral Out Karan for his personal updates. And while you're out there stalking him on social media, be sure to check out Desi Outsiders as well.
And we'd love to hear from you. So if you have any thoughts, feedback or questions for us, drop us a mail to mail@desioutsiders.com. And until next week, with a very special 50th episode, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders. Karan, also, just to mention about, you know, at the very beginning, we were talking about you on Twitter and stuff. Like, you know, I hope it didn't feel like we were having a dig at you. You know, I think it was important to have that conversation so people know about everything.
Are you guys
everything.
Kidding? I have been on stage and I have been roasted by other comedians.
I think you have too much of a thick skin for it. Like, our questions were really polite when it comes to, like, the stuff.
Yeah, you guys are totally polite. Yeah, absolutely.